Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you so much to Kulu for that news update. There'll be more news with the SAFM team at 7 o'clock. We kick off this particular Tuesday, the final Tuesday of the month of October with yet another weird law from around the world. We're sticking in North Korea because we found some new ones there. It seems as though in North Korea, parents who send their kids to schools are expected to provide desks, chairs, and even building materials. And this is over and above the school fees, because the fees that are being paid by the parents do not cover this. Strange laws. I don't make them up. I just see if I can find them. You tune into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest decision by Maersk Southern Africa to open the Cape Town cold store facility to support agricultural exports. We're going to speak to them and get a sense of what that means for the agricultural community. We're going to speak to the We Buy Cars chief executive officer on the share price and the trading statement that was released today. Then we have a conversation with the team at the National Gambling Board, taking a look at South Africa's gambling situation and where we stand from a financial year. And then we've got a conversation with the team at PrimeXBT, taking a look at online trading and what we can make of that. And then we're going to wrap up the show on this particular Tuesday with a property feature. We're going to be taking a look at the decision between renting and buying and which might be best at the moment.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show, as always, with a sense of how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by wealth manager at a PSG Old Oak, Skulk Lowe, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Skulk, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. 17 Rand 15, or 17.16 was the last I had a peek at. It seems as though you're doing something right. What's going on, Skulk? Yeah.
No, you've been so tough on me. I mean, you need to give me some props. Yeah, it's sort of the stars are aligning, Jimmy. I get the feeling, because you've had all these things. And the other evening we had a conversation off the grey listing, and I just these little things that we keep on doing right. I mean, how many things we had to do to get off that grey list, and how we've actually fixed this, and how we're now one of the, let's call it, the most compliant countries in the world. So that's just talking about the grey listing. And we're not, I don't think we're high-fiving each other, you know, enough. Next thing, I mean, we had, Bank of America came out with a report, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where they mentioned that they could see us going out of this junk status even before our next elections. Now, that'll be massive. And why I'm saying the stars are aligning, besides the fact that we've now gone off the grey list, we're also enjoying this massive run in the commodities that we are strong in producing. We're talking about, we're the largest platinum producer, we're the second largest palladium producer, the largest rhodium producer, the eighth largest gold producer, some of the largest copper producers. These commodities are doing really well. And people will say, well, wait a minute, Skulk, have you seen the news over the past, let's call it, 72 hours? I know. There's this meme, Jimmy, I don't know if you've seen that meme. I just loved it yesterday. I think it's Matthew McConaughey, and it's one of these scenes that he's sitting in a car, and he's like all oiled up, and he's muscly, and he's just smiling, and he's glowing like gold. And the meme says, gold traders on the 7th of October with gold reaching just below $4,000 per ounce. And then the next photo is the same Matthew McConaughey. He's sort of thinned out. He's pale in his face. He's like close to dying. And then it says, gold traders on the 27th of October with gold just below $4,000 per ounce. So it's exactly the same level on gold, but I mean, just two totally different environments. It's a healthy pullback, this. I mean, it's seen, and when I say it, the precious metals have seen a massive, massive run, not only this year, I mean, the PGMs only from April. So that's been good. But this is good for South Africa. It's good for our current accounts. It's good for our economy, and it's definitely good for the currency, it seems. The one thing, and I know you're going to speak to WeBuy cars a little bit later, so I'm not going to be focusing on that. And little old me, I want to look at a trend. It's an interesting trend, and there's a good reason, you know, for WeBuy cars why it pulled back. I think you're looking at this was a great hype after the listing, maybe a stretchy valuation, and if you're running a let's call it a 25 times PE earnings, you pretty much need to be a solid Themba Bavuma hitting that ball sweetly in the sweet spot every single time when you announce earnings. When you announce, core headline earnings only growing by 12 to 17%, market is going to most probably be a bit disappointed. Again, there's reasons, dilutions, all those things. What I want to get to is how these, let's call it consumer type of stocks, have been punished lately after just a slight, let's call it, disappointment in the market. We've had Truist, I think, about a month ago. They missed, and I think that day the share price dropped close to 15%. We had 2 weeks ago, we had the Fushini Group, similar story, slight miss. I don't think the results looked too bad. 17% drop in the share price. Pick and Pay earlier this week, again, I thought the results were pretty bang, solid. What Sean Somers said will be, nobody expected them to make a profit. We all know that they most probably only going to break even around about 2028. Yet when the flattish revenue came out, they were punished and again punished yesterday. And today, WeBuy Cars is no different. A consumer type of stock, we know if the market is going to be a little bit worried, this is the type of movements. I mean, 14-odd% drop in the share price again today. That's an interesting trend for me, and maybe a little bit of an overreaction, not just in terms of WeBuy Cars, but overreaction in terms of these consumer stocks after the results. Might be something to have a look at, towards the end of the year.
Skulk, let's take a look at some of the other markets. I'm looking at our own local equities and the financial stocks also having a relatively good day. It wasn't just the resource counters that had a positive day today. What do you make of some of the other movements? Is this to do with the fact that there is a bit more security and certainty and possibly even integrity where it relates to South Africa now that we've been removed from that grey list?
100%. You could not be more right, Jimmy. I mean, this is just brings confidence. I mean, we know that the investor confidence in South Africa, and when I say that, you'll refer to the net foreign in and outflows into our markets. We've seen for the past 2 months strong inflows in our local bonds. The local equities haven't reacted the similar way to the bonds, but usually it starts off with the bonds, and I'm expecting some more interest now that we've gone off the grey list in more than one space. You mentioned it. The financials did well. Usually financials do have a nice correlation with the rand. As the rand improves, you'll see the financials improve. And similar to SA property stocks. SA property stocks today as well, 1.8% up for the day, showing you an improvement in the currency, shows us that there's a sort of an optimism in South Africa. We most probably could see interest rate react downwards again. But also our resources today. I mean, we started off the day again, opening up, I think, 2% down for the day. And I thought, ooh, this is going to be, what's that, Dermot songs of the 60s? I'm Henry VIII, second verse, same as the first. I thought this is going to be second verse, same as the previous 2 days first. But then it turned around and ended the day at 2.4% up. So I think the general optimism is really still there for South Africa. And I'm going to be naughty. I'm going to be really naughty in saying that I wouldn't be selling South Africa short at this time. I still think we still got some upside looking at valuations.
Well, so far we are amongst the best performing equity markets in the world in dollar terms. So that is something there as well, outperforming pretty much every market that we can think of. I think when I last had a look at it, and Skulk, perhaps you have seen later data, the only other equity market that had outperformed South Africa globally was the South Korean KOSPI. So we were the second best performing market in the entire world, miles ahead of the likes of the S&P and NASDAQ. So clearly the South African market has found favor in light of these commodity prices. But Skulk, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts around what we're seeing from a commodity space where it relates to the oil price. The tensions and the comments from the United States around Russia increased the oil price towards that $66 a barrel level. We're back at $64. It's not much of a movement for some people, but for a net importing country like South Africa, every dollar counts.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is an important point. You always get a sort of a blip what could happen, and we saw it last week when Trump turned around and went to China and said to China, please do not support. We are sanctioning these two oil producers, and it's two of the largest oil producers in the world. Those two Russian oil producers account for about 5% of the total oil production in the world. And when Trump turned around and said, we're sanctioning these Russian oil because we want to now see some action. We want to see a ceasefire. We want to see action in terms of this war being stopped. We saw what the oil price did that day, 5% up. Remember, that's not done yet. So while we've got these geopolitical uncertainty, I would say currently just expect the unexpected. I wouldn't be calling a oil price going to a $40 or $50 like many people thought a year or so ago. I do think that the risk for oil and therefore also for inflation is on the upside, not on the downside.
Expect the unexpected, but don't underestimate South African markets at the moment. They are on a roll. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks as always to Skulk for the time and for the insight. Skulk Lowe, portfolio manager at PSG Wealth Old Oak, joining us to take a look at market movements, market sentiment, and perhaps some interesting investment opportunities.
There's a song that goes, money can't buy me love. And that's true. But then they told us all you need is love. Which anybody with a mortgage will tell you, most certainly is not true. Love won't pay your parking tickets or your student loan. It's also needy. It requires effort, availability, constant care. But more importantly, love requires time. And while money can't buy you love, it can certainly free up some of your time. Time to spend on the things you love with the people you love. And if you're looking, maybe even time to find the one you love. That's why, after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do the things you love. And don't you love that about investing? Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Maersk, the shipping company, has inaugurated their Belkan cold store facility in Cape Town. This is set to provide some very, very very useful relief towards agricultural exports and safeguard billions in those exports. We're going to be taking a look at this with the managing director at Maersk Southern Africa and Islands. That's Lubabalwa Mtia. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of this. Lubabalwa, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. This is a landmark moment. I mean, almost 2 billion rand in investments going into this cold store facility. Tell us more.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy. Firstly, let me clarify, because we actually launched two cold stores, as one here in Cape Town, there's one in Cato Ridge. So that's where the 2 billion comes from. So it is quite a momentous occasion for us to be launching this cold store that will be giving us about 10,000 pallet position for our exporters. It is actually a logistics park. So it's a cold store, which includes the coastal, which includes depot facilities plus also intermodal connectivity to the port. So it's a back of port operation as well that will provide a seamless connectivity for our customers to the port to avoid things like congestion or windbound situations.
Lubabalo, I want to take a look at the market that would benefit from this. I mean, obviously, from an export point of view, South Africa has got quite an array of exports. And if we specifically look in the agricultural space that would benefit from these cold store facilities, tell us or give us a sense of just how much impact this will then have on our ability to safeguard our export market and our ability to export to regions that might require us to have certain restrictions and conditions on our agricultural produce.
Yes, thank you for that question. I think it's a good example is to give what the South African table grape industry has done. It's an analysis that they've done in terms of some of the losses that they've experienced in the past when they're exporting goods. And they quantified up to 1.6 billion rands in one single year of losses due to a product that gets there either not on time or the product is damaged. And this is just only the grape industry. And so part of what we are doing with this cold store and also the facilities that I've mentioned is about removing or reducing some of that waste from an export point of view to make sure that the product gets to its final destination in the right conditions. There is no broken chain. So we offer just more than just a cold store as a Maersk, where we offer the solution from the pack store that when the fruit comes out of the farm right up to the end destination. And we do offer temperature monitoring and we do offer all the necessary protocols to make sure that the condition that it gets in there, it is what is required and is what our customers are promising to the end users, to the end customers at final destination. Yeah, it's about making our exporters more competitive in the marketplace.
Now, you touched on the fact that it's not just the Belkan facility in Cape Town. There's also the Cato Ridge facility that you are bringing online, at least for the agricultural producers to make use of. Take us through, from a Maersk perspective, what that does for the ecosystem in South Africa from a logistics and an infrastructure point of view, especially given the magnitude of this investment.
Yes, thank you very much for that. If you look at the major export hubs, you have two major export hubs, which is Cape Town and the other one is Durban. In Durban, we actually have two cold stores. We have a pretty cool cold stores, which has been in existence for about 5 years. And that is part of a joint venture that we've held. And then we've also invested in another cold store in Cato Ridge to cater for the fruit that is coming out of the northern part of the country. So you have fruit that is going from Durban to the more to the Far East. And then you also have fruit that is going more to North America, to also Europe, that is coming out of the Western Cape. And that we're making sure that we give our customers that flexibility and also that reliability that they require, whether they're serving Asia, Middle East markets, or North America and Europe markets. So we're giving them that optionality to make sure that whichever hub they are using, they do have the same quality of service that they require.
Maersk strengthening the optionality that agricultural producers and exporters have at their disposal with the latest investment. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Managing Director of Maersk Southern Africa and Islands, that's Lubabalo Mtia, for joining us to take a look at their latest commitments. In a world where a lot can change in 6 years, you can rest assured that Hino's 6-year drivetrain warranty won't. All Hino trucks now come standard with a 6-year drivetrain warranty, protecting your investment all the way from pistons to gears. Built to keep your business moving, supporting uptime, growth, and daily operations. Because although a lot can change in 6 years, our warranty promise won't. Terms and conditions apply. Hino all the way.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
WeBuyCars Holdings Limited, the newly listed business released a trading statement today on the financial performance we can expect for the financial year ended 30 September 2025. Now, of course, the full results will be released to the market on the 17th of November. So that is in the coming 2 weeks or so. But there have been some interesting announcements and interesting market reactions to the current trading statement that was released today. And we're going to be taking a look at the trading statement and some of the details with the co-founder and CEO at We Buy Cars, Faan Fundevalti, joins us on the line now to see what we make of these developments. Faan, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. It's a very rare opportunity that we get to speak under these conditions with the results still set to come. And of course, the trading statement is in line with JSE regulations and listing requirements for releasing the information. The numbers look positive. Core headline earnings per share increasing, basic earnings per share increasing, all the metrics pointing towards a good year. Yet, despite this, the market seemed to be a little bit nervous. Can you just take us through your thoughts, at least from a business perspective?
Jimmy, yes. Thank you for having me. Today, we did put out a trading statement, which we do every year before our results come out. There we announced that our core headline earnings will sit somewhere between 917 and 958 million rand, which, as you mentioned, is a good increase on the prior year of somewhere between 12 and 17. However, we did also notice a drop in the share price, and I guess that's because, you know, there's very high expectations of We Buy Cars, and we did start the year very well, and when we did our half-year results, that was well received. However, market conditions do change, and we did have a more subdued second half and softer than expected. So I guess this is a result of that. But yeah, overall, very happy. We're on track for growth. We've been keeping ourselves busy with lots of exciting things over the last year, which will come to fruition over the next few months, particularly new facilities. You know, for us to grow, we need to have more facilities. So both in Gauteng in Montana, in the north of Pretoria, as well as in the southern suburbs in Cape Town, we've been building very, very large warehouses, which will be close in size to what we have at the Dome. So creating this capacity will allow us to grow. But over and above that, you know, we've also launched the Vereniging branch a few months ago, which performing really well. And we've secured land in both Emalahleni, or the old Witbank, as people refer to it, and Richards Bay. So many exciting new locations. We've deployed quite a number of these new buying pods that people are now getting accustomed to across South Africa. The total number of pods is getting closer to 130 buying pods. You know, that's very convenient, and people love taking their cars there and have it evaluated and do a deal. Exciting times. And then from a technology perspective, we also launched a technology called Inspectify, which is a high-tech inspection platform where vehicle conditions are portrayed for clients in plain language, and we do that by using AI and internally built systems.
Faan, I want to take a look at some of the numbers that came through from a trading statement perspective. We saw that the core headline earnings per share did not increase by as much as investors might have thought, but that might have something to do with the fact that there were 83 million shares that had to be dealt with as part of the pre-listing conditions. This is something you had flagged to the market even before listing the company. Take us through some of the movements from a transactional point of view that may have, or that may affect this current financial year's numbers.
Yeah, look, that was all communicated in the pre-listing statement, so it didn't really have an effect on this year's financials. But the pre-listing statement is available for everyone to read. I find it boring, to be honest. But for us, you know, we want to deliver results. And for me, you know, the core headline earnings per share is what's important, because that's what shareholders are after. What do you get for bang for your buck, or should you move your money elsewhere? So that's our big focus, but it's not a short-term focus. You know, we will never make a decision to gain in the short term, but pay a price in the long term. We have a long-term focus, and I guess most of our shareholders are of the same view. You know, we have a long runway of growth. When we look at our market share, we're sitting somewhere between 10 and 12%. Every month in South Africa, there's around 150,000, 160,000 used vehicles being traded. So we're only doing a very small portion of that, namely 15, 16,000. So there's great scope for growth, and that's our focus because that's the prize we're after.
But Fawn, when we caught up with the We Buy Cars at the time of listing, there was ambition to hit almost 23,000 cars by 2028. Are we still on track for that plan?
Absolutely, yes. We are on track. We have a big plan, and that's why we're opening all these facilities, appointing more people, investing heavily in technology. It's with that in mind, exactly. And it's not only about growing the market share, but serving customers better. The offering and the service people experience with We Buy Cars, you know, has improved in leaps and bounds over the years, and we'll continue to do that. So it's both a volume and a quality game we are playing.
Fawn, given the trading statement that came out today and the fact that the market still closed down more than 9% despite the increase that has been projected from a business perspective, do you think the market's reaction at the moment is a fair reaction? And is it something for concern from a business perspective?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't want to speculate on reasons why people sell their shares. For us, you know, we feel that what we want to build for our shareholders is long-term value. We have a vision of growing the business over the next 5 years and beyond. And looking at our market share, the size of our market share, that's totally possible. You know, we've learned so many lessons, and we have now established a footprint. We've built the technology, and we're ready to go. So, I think it might be short-sighted, but I cannot deliberate on why I think people might buy or sell shares at the moment.
Continuing to deliver long-term value remains the focus of the We Buy Cars Limited business, and that is what it is that they're going to be reporting on when they give us those results, as I said, on the 17th of November. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the co-founder and CEO at We Buy Cars Holdings, Fawn van der Walt, for joining us to take a look at their trading statement.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot. Steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
According to the latest data, South Africa's gaming and betting landscape had industry turnover of just north of 1.5 trillion rands in the 2024-2025 year. We're going to be taking a look at this, seeing what we make of it, and more importantly, looking at the projections that this could increase to almost $3 billion US dollars by the end of 2030. I'm joined on the line by the acting CEO of the National Gambling Board, Lungile Dukwana, to take a look at this. Lungile, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's perhaps start the conversation with an overview of the online landscape and what it is that is covered by this landscape. I mean, there are clear distinctions between online gambling, online trading, and online betting, and I know one of those three remains illegal in South Africa, but perhaps give us an overview of that.
Good evening, Jimmy, and good evening to your listeners as well. Well, I think that the figure you mentioned, the 1.5 trillion, is the total gambling turnover, which gave us 1.5 trillion for the year 2024-25. We also reported that the GGR, the gross gambling revenue that we had, was about 75 billion. If you look at the percentage, about more than 60% of that, it's actually from online betting, which is legal in South Africa as we are. Now, when you look at the total contribution then of that into the GDP of the country, it gives us 0.83%. and employs about 33,169 permanent jobs. Extended jobs giving us 144,619. Now, what the whole issue is about this is that we're seeing that there's the growth of the betting, online betting specifically, which is not a trend that started now over the years. I think they've been growing since the time of COVID. I think in 2022-23, they grew at 53%. This year, which is 24-25, that we are reporting on to the portfolio committee, they grew at about 45%. Now, what it's basically telling us is that the shift in the market trends may be informed mainly by the issues around the shift in technology, where there's a lot of online access to products and services. And this has not been an exception, because now people don't have to go to the casinos. They can do it at the comfort of their environment, wherever they actually are. And I think that contributed a big time in terms of the trends that we are beginning to see.
Now, Lungile, I want to take a look at the other side of this. You touched on the jobs created, the contributions towards GDP, slightly less than 1% from that perspective. But this also does point to something to be concerned about, the fact that we're having such a significant increase in the rate at which people are choosing to go into the online gambling and betting markets. This is not just a concern from a consumer point of view, but it's a concern that's been flagged by various stakeholders, most recently some CEOs of JSE listed companies as well. Do you share the concerns? Do you share the sentiments? Is this an unhealthy level of gambling that we've reached?
Well, I think that in reality, there is a concern about this level of increase that we have seen, especially as it goes to the consumers that are gambling the most, and also it seems to be out of control in terms of the patterns that we're actually seeing from the consumer point of view. It's a concern, but our responsibility is also to balance the contribution that the gambling is making into the economy, whilst we balance that with the socio-economic impact that it is actually making to the consumers. And one of the biggest concerns that we actually have from the perspective of NGP is the fact that the advertisement that we have seen in all of the spaces that we see is going beyond what would have expected to be responsible in terms of those that are advertising. We cannot advertise in spaces where young people are going to be seeing those. We cannot advertise in spaces where there is no really control in terms of the content that is being conducted there. And the online aspect of that has also been one of the major considerations. And our view on that one has been that there needs to be a regulation of that space. And there's work that we are doing with the other provincial licensing authorities to deal with the issue of the licensing and making sure that those operators actually obey the licenses and do the advertising where they are supposed to, sending the message that they are supposed to be sending, which is a responsible message. And we want to make sure that in the process of doing that, they advertise where they are supposed to be doing that. And we cut on the use of celebrities, because the attraction to the celebrities is specifically from the youth perspective. And that's what we need to protect in terms of excessive gambling. And one of the issues we've concerned about is that when you gamble to the extent that some of the money that is supposed to be used for food at your house and it's supposed to be used for other things at your house and you are using it for gambling, it's a big challenge on ours. You're supposed to use gambling for recreation, not for the purposes of making money.
Lungile, I believe that there is a remote gambling bill that has been introduced to Parliament, and along the lines of what you've mentioned as the National Gambling Board and the concerns around what is being done around the advertising, should there be more done from a legislative perspective that would be the responsibility of the government to safeguard young individuals, to safeguard South Africans in general against these negative practices?
There is a progress in relation to dealing with the issues of online gambling, because that needs its own legislation, because in terms of the current act, it is actually not allowed. So in that specific instance, it means that there needs to be that regulation that comes up to regulate that particular space. But from our side, I think that as the NGP, one of the major considerations is that within the context of the legislation we have now, we should be doing the best we can to make sure that we deal with the aspects of the illegality that surrounds the gambling, that is the illegal online gambling, which is the biggest problem that we actually have. And that one is an issue that requires a partnership and collaboration with the various companies, the internet service providers. They need to be part of that. The banking sector needs to be part of that. We are going to be engaging even NSFAS to make sure that we are protecting some of the students that may be beneficiaries of NSFAS, but also discussing around SASA as well. But we are also working with the Department of Communications to make sure that we block the onlines to actually not access our space in relation to online gambling. In that way, we are protecting them from gambling with the illegal ones. We have no responsibility to make sure that the consumers are protected.
It's a fine line between consumer protection and profits, and we will have to keep an eye on this and see how it continues to unfold. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the acting CEO of the National Gambling Board, Lungile Dukwana.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by Prime XBT. Discover what's possible with Prime XBT. The investing world has changed over the last couple of years, and part of those changes have been the introduction of things like online trading and multi-asset trading. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the head of region at Prime XBT South Africa, Sihle Duta. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of this. Sihle, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with just what's been happening in the online trading space. I imagine with all of the geopolitical tensions and developments around the world, there has been an increased level of interest and even volatility in the online trading space.
Most definitely, Jimmy. I mean, the online trading space has sort of evolved since what it was about 10 or 15 years ago. I think we've seen more interest both locally, abroad, and obviously across the continent, particularly from younger traders, the ones who are obviously curious, are more techno-savvy, who are obviously curious, looking for more opportunities to earn an extra income. And also from people who really want to take away the responsibility of growing their money from traditional hedge funds and professional sort of money managers to making, you know, their own investment decisions. So definitely the interest in online trading has definitely quadrupled over the last decade or so.
Now, Sihle, even though individuals might want to go into this for themselves, it's not as easy as it might be made out to be. Sometimes there are risks, there are rewards, but more importantly, individuals need to know what it is that they're doing before they enter this space. Let's talk about the importance of education and the importance of understanding the kinds of products you are getting into.
Most definitely, Jimmy. I think the education is one of the most important pillars whenever you're getting into online trading. And we try, obviously, by all means, to educate our clients to make sure that they understand both the risks and rewards that come with online trading. I think it's a bit unreasonable just to push the reward narrative without shining a spotlight on the risk that's involved. I mean, it is a double-edged sword. It comes from both sides. You can make a little bit of money, but you can also lose it. So that is how, I mean, as a company, we empower our traders. I mean, we actively encourage responsible participation by helping them understand both, again, the potential and the risk. It's not just as much money as I can make and that's it. I mean, there's money to be lost, there's money to be made. As long as you understand both and then you take the necessary actions to make sure that you safeguard yourself against unnecessary risk, you should be on the safe side.
Speaking of responsible practices, Sihle, I want to take a look at the importance of regulation. Anyone that listens to this show, and there are a lot of people that do, will understand the importance of regulation, because we frequently have the FSCA on our show discussing all matters of regulation. And I speak about this quite openly around the fact that it is important for brokerages and those that are providing these services to be adequately and properly regulated. I want to get your thoughts around that and what that means for the trust that it builds with clients.
Absolutely, Jimmy. I think regulation is one of the top priorities that any investor or trader needs to look at whenever handing their money over to a broker, a bank, or any FSP. And I think regulation is important for many reasons, including one, investor protection. So regulation ensures that client funds are safeguarded through segregation. And secondly, market integrity. So regulated FSPs, including brokers like Primex, BT, must follow strict operational and reporting standards, which help maintain trust, transparency, and ethical conduct in the financial market as a whole. And thirdly, for the sake of accountability and oversight, so regulators around the world, including the FSCA, monitor broker activities, ensuring compliance with anti-money laundering and client due diligence requirements to prevent any financial crimes. And also for the sake of dispute resolution and recourse, I mean, things do go wrong. Sometimes clients and traders feel that they are hard done by. And once any internal processes have been taken on, only then can clients, you know, sort of approach the regulator. So in that case, then the regulator will play their role of becoming a mediator. So clients have the confidence of knowing that if things go wrong and they can't get any recourse with the broker, they can approach the regulator. And obviously the last one is for the sake of credibility and investor confidence. So operating under a recognized authority like the FSCA enhances the broker reputation. It also attracts sort of serious investors and promotes long-term sustainability. So regulation is absolutely critical, Jimmy.
And I've emphasized that on many an occasion to say that if brokers are not regulated, please do not place your funds with them. Sitle, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the South African market. It's an interesting landscape that we find ourselves in, and it's even more interesting for the brokerage and online trading space. There are a number of participants here that are looking to get a slice of the South African and indeed the African market. How then does a brokerage come into a marketplace and say, look, from a value proposition perspective, we might be doing things a little bit differently from other service providers, and how important is it to stand out from your competitors?
It's absolutely critical, Jimmy, because as we said earlier, I mean, if we look at the last 5 years alone, the number of players that have entered the South African market, I think more than 10. I mean, the regulators issuing licenses left, right, and center, and Primex BT is one of the few which has both the CFD license and the crypto asset provider license. So, you know, it's very important to obviously set yourself apart and stand out and provide what traders and clients are looking for in terms of pricing, because one of the most important levers that investors and traders look for is pricing, which comes in terms of spreads and commissions. So how products are priced is one thing. And secondly, the execution quality. You know, when traders are trading online, they also want to ensure that their trades are placed at the prices that they requested without sort of having any delays. And obviously, customer support. I mean, because money is at play here, you know, clients and investors are risking their hard-earned money. They want to have the confidence that there's always going to be somebody on the other line in case they need any support. So I think the one thing that sets us apart from our competitors is obviously our, you know, fair pricing, especially when you're trading CFDs on gold and Forex, our approach to client relationship management, our customer support, and obviously our institutional grade execution on all our trading tools that are available on our platform. And also lastly, the variety of asset classes that are available to trade on our platforms, I think, are second to none. Any asset class that any trader or investor wants to play around with from a CFD point of view, the chances are we have it on our platform already.
The world of online trading has increasingly become more popular, and it is important for investors and retail traders alike to make sure that they deal with the correct kinds of individuals and companies. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the head of region at Primex BT South Africa, Sihle Tuta, for joining us to take a look at the world of online trading. This interview was brought to you by Primex BT. Primex BT, empowering traders to succeed. Primex BT is an FSCA-regulated multi-asset broker bringing together trust, innovation, and expertise to empower traders to succeed. Trade across global markets from Forex and crypto to commodities, shares, and indices all in one place. Built for performance, they offer industry-leading conditions and a next-generation trading experience. Whether you're just starting out or refining your trading strategy, Primex BT give you the freedom to learn, grow, and explore new opportunities. Start your trading journey with Primex BT. Primex BT is an authorized financial services provider. Trade responsibly, as trading comes with risk.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's Property Tuesday, and we are taking a look at the ever-complex world of property rentals. We're going to be taking a look at whether or not now is the best time to be renting or buying. I'm joined on the line by the founder and CEO at Lansdowne Property Group, Jonathan Kohler, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Jonathan, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. For many, many years, for decades, as far back as I can remember, there's always been this conversation that if I'm renting a property, I'm effectively paying off somebody else's bond. Is it that simple?
It's definitely not that simple. I think if you speak to most guys in the residential property market, they will advocate for renting rather than buying. But it depends what market you're in. And it also depends what province you're in as well, I guess, you know, because you've got some provinces with good capital appreciation and you've got some provinces with close to zero capital appreciation. And yeah, I mean, if I can give you sort of a price-wise comparison, you know, so I mean, if you, you know, I think that there are a lot of times where it definitely makes sense to buy, and that is where the rental amount and the bond repayment is very similar. I mean, I'll give you an example of that. I mean, if you're purchasing a one-bedroom apartment in the Johannesburg area, you're probably paying around, you know, depending on where it is, you're probably paying about 6,000 Rand a month in rental. And if you had to purchase that property for 600,000 Rand, you'd be paying close to 6,000 Rand repayment. You know, so when the bond repayment and the rental are very, very similar, yes, there are extra costs to owning, for example, paying your levy and paying your rates and taxes. But I think there it really makes sense rather to buy your property rather than rent, you know, because the bond repayment and the rental is very, very close. And there's a little bit of a forced saving for the levies and also the bond repayment, you know. But I think when you start getting to sort of like the middle to sort of higher market, and you're looking at potentially buying a property for 6 million Rand, now you could probably rent that property in Johannesburg now for, I'd say, 30,000 Rand a month. And if you're renting for 30,000 Rand a month, that's half of what the bond repayment is. So people will still argue, well, surely, but I'm still paying off my own bond, and, you know, eventually it's going to be an asset, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the question that you have to ask is there capital appreciation in the market? In the last 15 to 20 years of Johannesburg, there's been no capital appreciation. So is it actually an asset if it's not appreciating? And is it worth paying off your bond with all of the interest payments, the levies, the rates and taxes, the maintenance, when you bought it for 6 million, but you're selling in 10 years' time for 5.5 million? So I think there's a lot of factors to consider, but hopefully those are two examples where you can sort of see the difference.
Mm. Jonathan, let's look at the asset side of it that you've touched on here. You say that for some property markets or for some spaces, there hasn't really been capital appreciation, and that's something to consider. Would that not also be a just argument for purchasing as well, to say if a property market is set to go up at some point and is set to rebound and recover, and it has been depressed for so long, that might be a good opportunity to pick up some really undervalued assets?
Yes, no, I agree with your sentiment 100%. I mean, in fact, I've owned Lansdowne now for 20 years. You know, we manage sort of thousands and thousands of people's properties. But I've rented for the last 10 years. And recently in Johannesburg, you know, we were sort of having a look with either purchasing in Cape Town or purchasing in Johannesburg. When we went and had a look at the property prices in Cape Town, it was literally for a sort of similar area, similar sized house. It was almost three times more expensive purchasing in Cape Town. And for that reason, we purchased in Joburg, you know, because Joburg hasn't had capital appreciation for many years. And in my opinion, it's at the bottom end of the market, you know. So purchasing now for a house for you to own, I think it sort of offsets a lot of the capital appreciation argument, because if we are at the bottom of the market, which I think we are, you'll get more capital appreciation should the property prices in Joburg start to appreciate again.
Mm. Jonathan, you touched on there being kind of different tiers within the property space, and I want to look at that in a bit more detail, because that could also speak to the decision between renting and buying. If someone is looking to potentially become a homeowner and they look at the market and say, I could purchase a small property at X amount and pay whatever that is on a monthly basis in a bond, or I can then put that into a larger property and rent that for the same amount. How do you start to navigate those decisions? Obviously, some of them are personal around how much space you need and some of the other things that go into the decision-making process. But is it then something that becomes a debate around the size of the property in relation to what you're paying for that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you also have to look at, am I buying the property to live in myself, or is it an investment property? You know, I think it's very, very attractive, you know, if people are looking to buy a little one bedroom apartment as an investment property in Johannesburg at the moment, you know, because the rental yields are really, really good. And then you can put a tenant in the property, and the tenant actually pays you rent, which basically covers the bond repayment and hopefully like a little bit of the levies and the rates and taxes. And yeah, you know, I mean, if you are purchasing a one bedroom apartment and you banking on the capital, you know, but you've purchased it to live, and now you're looking for a larger property like a two bedroom or a three bedroom, you're banking on that property appreciating in value. So you've bought it at 600,000, and then you can sell it in a couple of years' time for 800,000, and then you've got a larger deposit, let's say a 200,000 rand deposit, to put down on a larger property that you can move into. But you know, if property values are staying the same and there's no capital appreciation in the market, and also you're sort of having a look at the, always talk about the sort of rand to US dollar sort of depreciation of sort of 8% on average over the last 30 years, it's a difficult decision to put your money into residential property. And people are all, you know, also, again, you know, the property that you live in is not an asset. You know, I know people always think that it's an asset, you know, but you're purchasing a property, you're paying transfer duty. You're hoping it's going to appreciate in value, but, you know, but you want to make improvements, you know, so you do a renovation to the house. Then you want that money back when you resell. Then the bank come and evaluate your house and they don't value it at the improvements, you know. So I think it's, I mean, if you're buying for a property for you to live in, you can certainly offset and buy when it's a buyer's market, like Johannesburg is at the moment. And then you sort of offset the hope that there's going to be some good capital appreciation there, you know, but people don't like to hear that the home that they've invested all of their money in is actually a liability and not an asset in the end.
Jonathan, before I let you go, I want to take a look at what signs there are for someone to identify a seller's market, because if we look at markets like the Western Cape where you operate, that market has been running quite hot from a property perspective, and it has very much shifted into the demand outstripping the supply that's available in the market. How do investors look at a market like that and start to identify the shift between a buyer's market and a seller's market so they can take advantage of that?
Yeah, I think in Cape Town at the moment, you need to be very careful where you're buying. I mean, if you're having a look at that Atlantic seaboard area, listen, I mean, it's being driven by semigration, it's being driven by international buyers, you know, who keep purchasing. But I'd be very cautious on purchasing a property at the top end of the market. And Capetonians might think that it's not the Cape top end of the market yet, but we've seen even in the outlying areas sort of a slight tap off in terms of the demand for rental properties and the purchase prices that we're getting, you know, which shows that the demand is starting to tap off. And in Johannesburg, yeah, we've seen a lot more interest in properties, and, you know, we're starting to get people making offers, and our sales are starting to increase month on month. It's not significant yet, but there's definitely an improvement, you know. So I'd say I'd be apprehensive on Cape Town. However, you can offset that with just making sure that the rental yield is making sense for you with the offer that you make. You know, so if you're having a look at a one-bedroom apartment in Cape Town, it's on the market for 1.3 million. You can get 12,000 rand a month rental, and you want to get a 10% or 12% net rental yield. You need to offer the amount of the yield that you will get in the rental that you can get in the market. You know, so you just need to speak to, you know, an agency in the area. So this one bedroom's renting for 12, the levies are 1,000 rand, the rates and taxes are 500 rand, my net rental yield per month is x, you times that by 12 divided by the purchase price, and you'll get your exact rental yield, you know. So you can still feel comfortable even when it's a seller's market and you're worrying that it's going to tap off, by offsetting it by offering the price that makes your rental yield make sense.
Important considerations when evaluating the decisions to purchase or rent properties. I think we'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Jonathan Kohler for those insights and for the time. Jonathan Kohler, Chief Executive Officer at Lansdowne Property Group, joining us for our property segment this week.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, of course, they are available online for you to go and catch up on them. You know exactly where to find them. For now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock.